नमस्ते यतिराजाय विवेकानंद सूरये सच्चित्सुखस्वरूपाय स्वामिने तापहारिणे। I salute the sage Vivekananda, the king of monks, the one who removes all sorrows and who is an embodiment of infinite existence, knowledge and bliss. My dear So today I have been given a subject to talk to you, that is the subject of Vedanta of Swami Vivekananda. So it is a great occasion in this 150th year of the birthday of Swami Vivekananda. We are meeting here and discussing the message of Vedanta Swami Vivekananda. Swami Vivekananda's message of Vedanta, as you all know, is the universal message of Sri Ramakrishna, which he delivered to the world in 1893, Chicago Parliament of Religions. And Swamiji spoke from Vedanta, that means the Upanishads. Almost all his lectures are based on Vedanta, the Upanishads. He took pride in saying, I have never spoken about any personality, I have never spoken of any particular deity, I have spoken about the universal spirituality that has been discussed in the Upanishads. What is this Vedanta? It is the declaration that man is divine, nay, that man is divinity itself. Vedanta teaches, Tat Tvam Asi, thou art that. Yes, the Vedantic scriptures called the Upanishads say that in every one of us resides God Himself, our body-mind complex is a temple of God. Therefore, every man and woman is a potential God awaiting only manifestation. Swami Vivekananda called man as a potential divinity and called religion as the means to manifest this potential through the famous four yogas, which he himself explained in detail: the yoga of knowledge, Raja Yoga, the yoga of meditation, yoga of knowledge, Jnana Yoga, yoga of meditation, Raja Yoga, yoga of devotion, Bhakti Yoga, and yoga of action, Karma Yoga. Swamiji also advocated that all these yogas can be blended with one another to suit the mental makeup of every individual. This was a great contribution of Swamiji to the Yoga Shastra, the science of yoga. Up to Swamiji, people thought that yogas are all different compartmentalized yogas. One cannot be combined with another. But Swamiji said they can easily be combined and they should be combined so that each man can have his own yoga at the combination of these four yogas. Swami Vivekananda then explains the way these yogas work on our mind to transform us from mortal into an immortal selves. By practicing these yogas, we transform ourselves into the mortal being that we consider ourselves to be now, into immortal souls. That will be the revelation that comes to us by practicing yoga. This transformation, Swamiji always used to say, is like an awakening from a hypnotic state or a dream. we then realize about what we really are, namely immortal beings of infinite knowledge and infinite bliss. I was telling in my morning lecture also about a lady who was imbalanced in mind. She was the daughter of a millionaire. She was daughter-in-law of another millionaire. But she used to consider herself as a beggar. She would be moving about in the streets of Bombay. So I met that lady. I was just thinking, our state also is like that mad lady. She is a millionaire, but she thinks she is a beggar. We are all millionaires. That means we are the children of God. We have got infinite bliss within ourselves. We are running vain all the small pleasures which is eluding us. Running vain pleasures that do not come to us. So we are thinking that we are immortal. We need not be afraid of anything. But we are afraid of every little thing. A little thing happens to us. Oh, what will happen to us? Run to Apollo Hospital, run to this hospital. So much afraid we are. Why? We are thinking we are mortal beings. We are bodies. Whereas we should be thinking that we are the immortal beings. So Swamiji always stressed that nothing has to be created. We are already that. Swamiji was asked, Swamiji, you are telling that everybody is a potential God. Can common man, like the peasant on the field, can he realize that he is an immortal Atman? Swamiji said, why not? Nothing is to be created. Even that peasant has the immortal Atman in him. He is already the Atman. Only he is thinking he is a peasant. Just as the king is thinking, I am a king. That is also delusion. If you act as a king in the drama, you are only a drama actor only, you are not a king. If you act as a servant in the drama also, you are not as a servant. You are the same person. Swamiji always used to give this example. We are already that. Therefore, there is no question of high or low in this one. Everyone is capable of realizing this. When once this experience or realization comes to us that we are the immortal self, we would feel that we are not our bodies or egos, but that which operates them. We are the operators of our body and mind. We are not our body, we are not our mind, but we are the operators, different from both. In our ordinary speech also, when we say, this is my pen, what do we mean? Pen is different and I am different. I am not pen. When I say, this is my pen, I don't say I am pen. So the pen is different, I am different. The relationship is, I am the master of this pen. When I say, this is my body, it should be like that. I am not this body. I am different from this. I possess this body. We also talk of our mind. My mind is not well today. My mind is very happy. When you say my mind, it's like my pen. Mind is different. We are different. So I am the master of this. That is the relationship between us. Vedanta calls our divine self, the Atman, as the owner of the chariot, which is the body and the mind. Body and mind are like vehicles. So we are the drivers. So whatever happened to the vehicle, we need not bother about. Suppose some accident happens to the car. Do you go to the hospital to take medicine? You don't go. You send the car to the hospital. Similarly, Atman should be always blissful, whatever happens to the body. A man who realizes Atman, he will always be blissful. The body may become old, body may suffer, but he is always in joy. That great song of Sri Ramakrishna is there. Dukkha jane, sharir jane, man tuhi anandeta. Sri Ramakrishna used to sing a song. Let the body and the sorrow take care of themselves. You be always in your joy. That means no, that body is different and you are different. Body has its own way. It becomes old, it becomes suffering. One day it passes away. Let it go. But I am always an immortal self. I am the child of God. When the Atman is described as a chariot owner, and the body and mind is described as a chariot in the Upanishads, it means the owner cannot be the chariot. He is different from the chariot. So is our self, not the body, which is mortal, that is, it is born and it dies, whereas we are immortal Atman. This realization that we are the immortal divine self, the Atman which is different from mortal body and ego is called the true spiritual knowledge. In Bhagavad Gita you read in the 13th chapter, Kshetra Kshetrajnayor Jnanam Yatta Jnanam Atam Mama. The real knowledge is that which reveals that you are the, no, you are not the body, you own the body, you are the master of the body. Kshetra Kshetrajna. Kshetra is body, Kshetrajna is he who knows this is my body. So, this knowledge that I am different from the body, this is the real knowledge that makes us really fearless in life. Swamiji called this the goal of our human life, to realize that we are not the body and the mind, but we are that immortal self. By this realization, we would go beyond all fear, including the fear of death. When once we know that we are the souls, body has its own way, it has taken birth, it has to become young, then it becomes youth, then it becomes a middle-aged one, then afterwards it approaches the old age, then it passes away. That should not bother us at all. That is the nature of the body. I am the immortal soul. If we can get this knowledge, that is the true knowledge, and the utility of that knowledge is, you will become absolutely free from every type of fear. I always say, there is only the fear of death that manifests in all our fears. All other fears we say, I know Swami, I am afraid of bad health. Why should you be afraid of bad health? Because you are afraid that bad health may lead you to death. So people are afraid of death. But they do not know that they have no death. Body only dies. So if a man knows that I am the immortal soul and I have no death at all at any rate, he will become most daredevilry. If he has got, he adventures into any dangerous situation, he is not carried away, he is not moved away from any fear. So I always give a small example for that one. A small boy was there in a family. He was the only child of the family. So naturally he gets all the love of the parents. This fellow is fond of dolls. So he would ask the father, Father, give me a good doll. So and then some father brought a good doll made of wood. And he went away to office. In the evening when he came, this fellow has broken that doll and thrown it into pieces. What was the reason? Children think that doll also is living. So they keep the doll, come, they call, it will not come. So, hey, lie down, it will not lie down. Get up, it does not get up. He gave the milk, you drink this milk, it does not drink. They get tired of the useless thing. It has become encumbered to me. They break it. This is how children get disgusted. They think it is alive, it is not. So they get disgusted. That is what has happened. So he has broken the doll. Next day when the father is going out, Father, get a good doll. Then father thought, if I give him a wooden doll, he will break. Let me give a cotton doll. He cannot break. He gave a cotton doll, went away. Same state. He is asking, come. It does not come. Lie down, he will not lie down. They went and tore away its hand, tore away its leg, tore away its neck. So the father comes and sees the whole doll is gone. Third day when he is going, so father, bring me a good doll. Then father thought, this fellow must be taught a lesson. He breaks the wooden one, he tears the woolen one. Let me give him a iron doll. See, he made a metal doll he brought, very well colored, beautiful one. He gave it to the child and went away. In the evening when he returned, it was not the boy who met, his wife was standing at the door sill. He asked, did you give that metal doll to your son and go? He said, so did he break away that one? That one also. He did not break that doll. With that doll he has broken everything in the house. He has dashed it against everything in the house. All the things in the house are broken. I tell this story to say, we must become like that metal doll. We must be able to clash with everything, any trial, any tribulation. We must come out successful. All things will break. We will not break. We are immortal. A man of knowledge, spiritual knowledge, will be like that, daring to the extreme. We see Swamiji's life. He was not afraid of anything. Bull is charging. I was in London recently. Then we went to a place, Pinckney. One Pinckney?
Pinckney is green.
Yes. So, there is a very interesting incident in Swamiji's life. Swamiji was there in that place. It is very near our ashram, Borne. And there, Miss Muller and in another his another disciple, Sturdy were there, Mr. Sturdy. Both were walking along a meadow there. Suddenly Swamiji found a mad bull is rushing towards them. Then that Sturdy, he was sturdy enough to run away. So he left these two people, ran away, escaped. But this Miss Muller was a hefty lady. She tried to run. After some time she could not run. She just collapsed. So Swamiji's duty it is now to protect her, and the bull is gun charging. Swamiji thought, the only way is I must stand between in front of this lady and face this bull. Swamiji went and stood there, steadily looking at the bull. Bull came nearer, nearer, nearer. Just a few feet, something happened. That bull stopped there, just nodded its head, turned back and went away. Then afterwards Miss Muller got up, Sturdy also came. Swamiji, they asked Swami Vivekananda, Swamiji, when the bull was charging, you were staring at the bull and you, what were you thinking at that time? They thought he must have been very much afraid. He must be thinking about his death. But Swamiji said, I was not thinking anything. I was just thinking, this fellow is coming to take and throw this body away. He cannot throw away my soul. Bull is going to throw my body away. How far will he throw? What distance in my body? Go and fall. See this fearlessness of this man. He never knew any fear at all. So this is the state we attain to when we realize this Atman, that we are the spiritual souls. How to attain this knowledge? That is the point. Through all the four yogas, as discussed earlier, Swami Vivekananda has described the Karma Yoga, Raja Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga. Any one or any combination of them we can adopt. All yogas will lead us to the knowledge that we are this immortal Atman. But Swamiji had a special stress for the service of God in man. It is a special Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga, usually we do the karma and offer it to the Lord, the fruits of it to the Lord. But Swamiji said, because he had attended one of these Sri Ramakrishna's conversations in Dakshineshwar. One day Swami Vivekananda and other disciples were all with Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna was explaining the tenets of Vaishnavism. Tenets of Vaishnavism, Sri Ramakrishna said, Vaishnavism says you must have name ruchi, taste for the name of God. That means you should take the name of God with great love. That is what we call a japa. So you must do the japa of the name of God. So that is one of the tenets of Vaishnavism. Second important one was, you must serve the devotees of God. Vaishnava seva, service to the devotees. That is also a great tenet which makes your mind pure and you can attain to the knowledge of God. Third one, very important one, he said, compassion to the creatures. Jive daya. Jive daya, compassion to creatures. As soon as Sri Ramakrishna said, he corrected himself immediately. He went to an ecstasy and realized some higher meaning for that statement. He started correcting himself and said, no, not compassion to creatures. It is the service of God in every creature. Shiva jnane jiva seva. It is to consider every creature as a temple of God. God alone lives in everybody. Therefore, it is not compassion that you show, but is you are serving God, worshipping God through every creature. So every creature's body and mind is the temple of God. So Sri Ramakrishna, after telling this one, he went into ecstasy again. Others did not understand the depth of the teaching, the meaning of the teaching. It was Swami Vivekananda who came out with a great joy. He said, today I have heard one of the greatest teachings of Sri Ramakrishna, where he has reconciled jnana and karma. He has reconciled jnana and bhakti. He has reconciled the worldly life with the spiritual life. Such a great teaching. If I get an opportunity, I propagate to the whole world. And what were the teachings? Swami Vivekananda explains that one when he said, it is not compassion to the creature, it is service of God in the creatures, service of God in man. Shivajnane Jiva Seva. To think that every being is God himself, potential God. So when we help the creatures, let us say man, all of we human beings, we have got dealings with only men and women. So when we do something for man, let us not consider it the social help or a sort of a rehabilitation or something out we do out of pity. Let us consider it the worship of God in man. So this can be, Swamiji said, of four kinds. We can help, we can worship God through physical help. So we can give physical help to people. When people are in famine, so we can give them food. When they are in other calamities, we can give them treatment, we can give them medicine, we can give them other physical things. We can build houses where devastation of houses are there, earthquakes are there. So that is a physical worship of God, he said. It is not a earthquake relief you are doing. You are worshipping God by giving him, serving him, by building houses for him, by giving clothes to him, by giving food to him. So this is physical worship of God. Then next comes, everywhere people don't need houses. Suppose I come to America, you are all having better houses than any big houses that I see in India. You don't require any houses. So how can I worship you? Don't you require worship? Here also we can worship. People want higher education here. Here education may be there of a technical kind, maybe yes, of a scientific kind, but the education in spiritual life, where is there? Moral life, where is there? Where are the model families here? How to rear up a model family? Swamiji was very proud of Indian families. He used to say, you see, our family system is so strong. 1,000 years of slavery over our country has gone. The Muslims ruled over it. For some reason or other, India became slaves under the Muslim rule. Almost 1,000 years under them. Almost about 200 years under the British. They tried to destroy the Indian family, Indian religion. But Indian family stands so strong today. So if you come to India, even today that love of father, mother to the children, children's love for the parents, husband's love to the wife and wife love to the husband, something very unique. Swami used to tell about this. There is something unique in our family system because we stress the spiritual side. And Swamiji again and again used to say, what is the uniqueness of this Indian nation? He said, after 1,000 years of slavery, today if the rishis of the Vedas come now, today also you can see in the temples in India, same mantras being told, uttered in the same way as they uttered some thousands of years back. Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai. Same tune that were uttered 10,000 years ago by the rishis. They would find the same mantra and same devotion to Veda, same devotion to spiritual life. So Swamiji said, this is the spiritual foundation that has saved this Indian nation. So we have got a 10,000 continuous history which no nation in the world has. Swamiji was proud because of this. We know how to build humanity on a strong foundation. It can have a continuous culture for 10,000 years, irrespective of whatever happens in history. So this culture, spiritual culture, Swamiji used to say, that not compassion but service of God in man. This idea, when it comes to us, that if we remember that God resides in every one of his creatures and serve all creatures irrespective of their caste, creed, color, religion or gender, as worship of God in them, we can easily reach our goal of spiritual enlightenment. As I was discussing with individuals here and in another lecture, the spiritual enlightenment, that is knowledge that we are the immortal self. It is nothing to be created there. We have forgotten that one. We have to re-remember that. Now you remember that incident I gave about that imbalanced lady. To make her a millionaire, you don't have to give her millions. What you have to do, take her to a psychologist. What does the psychologist do? He will ask her questions one after another, catharsis. What is psychological catharsis? He will have sittings with her. First sitting, he will go on asking her questions. Who was your husband? She said, I don't know. She will say, I don't know my husband. You don't remember his name also? No, I don't remember. You remember the husband's house? Where? I don't remember. Your father-in-law, do you remember? He will go on trying to make her remember his millionaire father-in-law and millionaire father. Somehow if she remembers, I am the daughter of a millionaire or daughter-in-law of a millionaire, that remembrance is enough. The moment she remembers, all millions come to her. She will behave like a millionaire. Nothing else to be done. So what does he do? He will go on talking about the glorious part of her life, that you are the daughter-in-law of a millionaire, you are the son-daughter of a millionaire. So remember those days. You will go on asking questions. First sitting, second sitting, third sitting, fourth sitting. Perhaps in the fifth sitting, suddenly when he asks, was not your father a millionaire? Yes, he was. Then yes, she has come to remember the father. Your father-in-law? Oh, he was also a millionaire. That is why I was married. He has paid so much dowry to her. Then she has come back to her. She, at that very moment, she forgets all that I am the beggar. She behaves like a millionaire. That is by making us remember our glory. This is what we do. When Swamiji says, whenever you do any work in the house or outside the house, inside the house we are going to serve our children, serve our relatives, father, mother, husband, wife, children. When you serve, you think, I am serving, I am worshipping God. You are giving milk to the child. You say, I am giving milk to Gopala. You are serving your wife or husband. So if God is there, I am serving God in him. Every act of you brings God into your mind. And remembering God means that we are all children of God, we know. So if God is true, God is there, I am also his child, that is also true. We go on indirectly remembering ourselves and our glory also. When somebody praises your fathers, don't you feel proud? Oh, your father was such a great man. You feel 2 inches higher. You see, he is not praising you. He is praising your father. But your glory also goes up. This is what we do when we pray to Sri Ram Krishna or God. Oh God, you are my father and mother. When you say you are my father and mother, you are thinking, I am not anything less. I am your child. Indirectly. Yes. Our glory, we remember morning and evening. Swamiji teaches us, why morning and evening? In every action you can remember. So I am giving milk to my child. Hey, Gopala himself is there in this child. You go to your husband, Shiva is my husband. I am Parvati herself. You go on thinking about your divinity. This is the catharsis. We are in hypnotism, thinking we are mortals. Our immortal nature. More and more we remember. More and more what we call as purity comes to us. Divinity comes to us. So Swamiji stresses on that. Because every such act of thinking that we are worshipping God would become a worship, and all our social activities become spiritual practice. Spiritual practice means, in spiritual practice we remember God. In every action when I am remembering God, every action becomes a worship. More the worship, better for you. We go to the temple. Sometimes you spend 10 minutes and then we come back, we feel a little peace. Sometimes you are in high moods, we sit there itself for another half an hour. So some worship goes on. That day you will feel more peace. Oh, I have wasted more time, you never think. More the worship, more joy to you. Because you know it accrues as a punyam in which we have faith. Though every work if we think is a worship and it is giving us, purifying our mind, it is taking her towards enlightenment. Work becomes a joy. Work, this is the work culture that Swami Vivekananda was trying to give us, in which mission we have taken up that one. All our devotees, all our followers, they take up this work culture. Work is not work. work is worship. Through work, we are connected with only people. So you go to the company, all around you people that are sitting there, either your juniors or senior officers, so you are helping them. Or when you are working in the field as an engineer, so many people are working under you. They are again human beings. So you are giving them money, you are giving them other help, you are recommending some promotion to them. Everything is a worship. Connect God with every, through every work. Every work, the whole day, our social work, our official work, our educational work, every work becomes a purifying spiritual practice. So thus purifying our mind of its attachments and aversions, and finally giving us the highest knowledge of Supreme Self. So if by remembering God, we remember our own divinity, as I have said. You may say, sir, you see, we are trying to do japam, we are doing attending satsang, then we are visiting holy places, but nothing is happening. Never think like that. Every act of spiritual life, as the Guru has said, it is always taking you nearer and nearer. We may not be aware of it. For example, in our country, we don't have very big missionaries to break these rocks. So we supply granite to so many outside countries. We don't have very sophisticated machinery. We engage coolies. So they make holes, huge rock is there. They make a series of holes, put some pieces of iron into it. Take big hammers and go on beating over that. So some 10 fellows are there, one at that level, another at this level, another at this level, going on beating with big hammer, the iron bits into the holes. That is a huge rock. Each man is giving 100 blows, 105, 205, 300, 900, 999. It does not break. Nothing seems to be happening. 1000th blow when he gives, it breaks. Did the 1000th blow only break it? Or from the first blow it has broken? But we didn't see. We saw it's breaking only in 1000th blow. But you cannot get the 1000th blow until you have got all the 919. Every day sadhana, every little action we do is breaking our bonds, taking away our ignorance that we are this body. It is bringing us nearer and nearer to the self-realization. That's what Swamiji says. By every act, we remember that we are worshipping God. By worshipping God, we are remembering our own glory, that we are the children of God, we are divine. More this idea, we are nearer our realization. This is the inspiration behind the huge relief, rehabilitation and other welfare activities, including the spreading the Vedantic message through our various centers all over the globe. Our monks and lay devotees find immense joy in serving the poor, needy and ignorant through our welfare activities. Hospitals, dispensaries, hostels, schools, colleges, technical institutes, etc. In this connection, Swami Vivekananda advocates that our services should suit the place and the people. Many times people ask, Swami, why don't you start some schools and colleges here? He says, there is no necessity. The schools and colleges are of a very high grade here. In India, there is no high grade college and school. There we have to go and start. Here what is required is the spiritual education. That's what is being done here. It should this place and the people. In India, we have to give this education also, but for this education we have to eradicate the poverty, that is the curse. Swami Sri Ramakrishna used to say, empty stomach is no good for religion. You cannot give a religious instruction when a person is hungry. First give him, satisfy his hunger. Let him overcome his hunger. And also little of spiritual, secular knowledge. We must know the geography and the history of our society. So then we feel, so we have a dignified place in society. Afterwards comes the next quest. Who am I? Where have I come from? What will happen to me after this birth? Why are so many people, some are suffering, some are happy, though they are all in the same society, maybe from the same family. Why one is suffering and one is very healthy, some are born with silver spoons, some are suffering from the very birth. these higher questions will come when the basic question of ignorance goes, and then poverty, if financial poverty will go. That is the two curses in any developing country, is eradication of poverty, eradication of ignorance. So Swamiji, when he came to India, he told the audience, you see, your rishis have given you already in the Upanishad mantra, Matra Devo Bhava, Pitra Devo Bhava, Acharya Devo Bhava, Atithi Devo Bhava. The four mantras, you consider your father and worship your father as God. Similarly, mother as God, the guest as God, and your teachers as God. And Swamiji said, I add two more to it. He had every right to add. He was one of the Saptarshis. If all the ordinary rishis can give you mantra, he can certainly add mantra. He said, I will add another two more mantras to it. Murkha Devo Bhava, Daridra Devo Bhava. Murkha Devo means, consider the ignorant man as God and serve him. That means, try to remove his ignorance in every way. Open schools for him. Let give him. If he cannot understand by one teacher, you give four teachers to him. Swamiji in one place said, if a higher class person or higher community person requires one teacher, the other lower community person who has been denied education, he requires four teachers. Give him four teachers. This is what I understand by justice. So remove the ignorance of the ignorant man. Murkha Devo Bhava, by giving education. Similarly, eradicate the poverty. So, Daridra Devo Bhava, consider a poor man as God, serve him, do everything to remove his poverty. Teach him something that by which, you know, he can earn for himself and also save something for his wintry days. So, Swamiji gave these two mantra. How great they are. Swamiji uttered this words in 1897, and it is 110 years all the governments that have come, our independent India government, are doing only these two. As soon as the government comes, it takes poverty eradication programs, and as soon as it comes, he said, let us open some schools, let us open some colleges, open more schools and more colleges. That is eradication of ignorance. Murkha Devo Bhava, Daridra Devo Bhava. Swamiji said at that time, all our welfare activities in a secular world is only these two. And next to this come the spiritual education. When once he used to say, in India we have got overdose of spirituality. So the people, the children of rishis, we have overdose of spirituality. It has to manifest. So for manifestation, the obstacles are the poverty and the ignorance. When once the general education level goes up, everybody is educated. They know what the world is, what the world wants now. They clearly will understand only bread alone will not satisfy man. He requires spirituality also. As Christ said, man does not live by bread alone. Somebody jested, no, he requires butter also. That is not the idea. What Jesus wanted was, he requires spiritual education. Swamiji also said in one place, you bring all the wealth of Kubera and pour it on the head of one village, you cannot satisfy the village. Unless men become pure, men become holy. You must teach men to become pure and holy. When will they become pure and holy? Until they think that we are the children of God. So this idea that I am spiritual, I am a child of God, so I should not be dictated by my body and mind. I must dictate my body and mind. I must be a master. I must control my senses. I must control my mind. This idea must come to people. That can come through spiritual education. So Swamiji said, first when these two curses are removed in India, then teach them also Vedanta. Vedanta requires for the West as well as for the East. In the East, they require something more as a basic preparation. Common man has to be given secular education also, and his poverty is to be eradicated. This is Swamiji's Vedanta. Swamiji often said, like a Bodhisattva, may I be born again and again and suffer thousands of miseries so that I may worship the only God that exists, the sum total of all souls. To everybody, Everyone was a god to him. His message has caught the imagination of many thinkers all over the world. Swamiji always thought, if somebody is very rich, he said God has given him the riches, not all for himself, so that he may help others. The famous incident of Rockefeller. Rockefeller met Swami Vivekananda. In his life it is a very great incident. Now you all know Rockefeller is one of the great Rockefeller foundations. Internationally they donate a lot of money for education, for cultural advancement of other nations. It all started with Swamiji. Rockefeller was a very proud man and a very stingy man also. There are very wonderful incidents about Rockefeller. So Rockefeller, he would not care to listen to anybody's advice. Somebody said, see, there is, when Swamiji was in perhaps New York or Chicago, so he was staying there in his disciple's house. Somebody said, Rockefeller, see, there is a yogi, he is well known all over now, he has spoken in this parliament of religion, why don't you go and meet him? First he did not bother. Afterwards, someday he thought, let me go and see him. And he was so proud, he came to the house. He did not even care for anybody to lead him into the house. Straight away he entered Swamiji's drawing room. So Swamiji was sitting in his room. And then Swamiji was bending his head and writing something. Then Rockefeller came. As soon as he came, Swamiji looked at him. Said, Swamiji started telling him, you have got so much of money. Don't think that all that money is for yourself. God has given that one to you to be given to others. You are only a trustee of my money. See, Swamiji says, and this man, so haughty, without asking, he is giving me upadesham like this. He is giving teaching. Who is he to give upadesham, teaching to me? He walked away in a whiff. As he got in, he went out also. After a few days, Swamiji was staying in the same house. Again he entered his room. He threw a piece of paper on Swamiji's table. At the time also Swamiji was bending his head and writing something. So in that paper it was written, you see, I have donated such a huge amount and created a trust. You thank me for that. It was written. Swamiji looked at him. You have to thank me for that, he said. It was my advice that has made you give. And that was the beginning. And this Rockefeller was a very stingy man. There is another one funny incident, though it is not connected with this. He wanted to construct a 10,000 seated auditorium. So he called the auditor, the architects. Architect designed the whole big hall. Everything was ready. Then architect came and explained to him, sir, it will be like this, it will be like this. Here will be the entrance. Here will be the emergency exit. But sir, there is one small thing, a little alteration in your suggestion. Out of 10,000 seats, 4 seats will be short. That is, make the podium the way more elegant. Therefore, I am eliminating 4 seats in front. Then Rockefeller said, what do you mean by eliminating 4 seats? 4 seats cost me every day. Each seat costing $50 means every day $200. For 30 days, so many dollars. For 12 months, so many dollars. Can I give you for my loss for 10 years? Sir, you need not give the calculator. I will give 4 seats. So he immediately included 4. This was the stingy man. Swamiji's teaching changed him. So Swamiji's idea that everybody in this world, we are here only to realize our soul. That is the goal of our life. Money becomes a problem when it goes beyond a particular limit. We want money for our comforts, but luxuries will drag us down. Milk is good as long as you take it in limits. If you drink 2 liters of milk, you will become an indigestion. This milk is bad. Milk is not bad. You have not used it properly. Similarly, luxury also is overdose of wealth. That is not necessary. Swamiji would advise all the rich people, it is there for you to worship the others. People who are not having, you give them. This idea of Swamiji, worshipping God through man, it is catching the imagination of many great thinkers. I was last time, maybe a few years back, in Mauritius. So in Mauritius, first time when I had been, I had not seen a big hall there. Second time when I went, some 4-5 years back, then they showed a 10,000 seated hall, not a Rockefeller's hall, but this was a different hall. And on that hall it is written, Swami Vivekananda's International Cultural Center in Mauritius. This one is wonderstruck. 10,000 seated auditorium hall named after Vivekananda. So that devotee, a Mauritian gentleman, I asked him, why have they given the name of Vivekananda? So I was curious, so he took me there. When I went in that big hall, at the entrance itself, you have got a bust of Swami Vivekananda. Under that bust, it was written, serving all needy people, irrespective of the race or religion or nationality, can be a universal religion. This is Swamiji's statement. Serve people who are in need. Maybe America, maybe England, maybe Australia. There are people in need. If you help them, it is a religion. You realize God through that. That was Swamiji's greatness. Everywhere people are accepting it. Swami Vivekananda was convinced that all religions are part of a single universal religion called direct realization of God. Religion means realization. That was Swamiji's definition. That was Sri Ramakrishna's definition. Simply talking about God won't do. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, go on repeating milk, 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 will you get a satisfaction? Take a glass of milk and even without telling milk, drink. You will get nourished. Telling is not the important thing, doing is important. Realization is important in religion than talking about religion. So Swamiji said, direct realization is the real test of religion. So the above service of God in man can thus become the meeting ground for all religions. The service of man and self-realization through that. And not beliefs and dogmas should form the core of every religion. Swamiji always used to say, to understand that all religions are one, don't go and read the scriptures. If you read Quran, if you read Bible, if you read Vedanta, if you read Bhagavad Gita, or if you read Zendavesta, you cannot reconcile them. It's not possible. See the people who have realized God in those religions. Take a Sufi mystic. Take the mystics of Christianity. Take the mystics from Buddhism, and take the mystics means the bhaktas, saints and seers of Hindustan. Take Saint Francis of Assisi. All of them, they never differ in the love of God. They never differ in the holiness of God, and they never differ in the mercy of God on His creatures. God is our father, He is our mother, He is all love. Every religion, the mystics, speak the same language. Sri Ramakrishna used to call it, all jackals howl in the same way, whether they are in America or in India. The howl of jackal is the same. Mystics speak the same language, because it is through experience they talk about religion. They don't talk from books. Whenever people have talked from books, the pandits from Sanskrit books from India and mullahs from the Arabic books, they will quarrel. Because they are not talking from experience, they differ. Whereas mystics always, they agree with one another. So that's why Swamiji quoted in the Parliament of Religion, the mystics, when you go, you find all the mystics of every religion, they agree. That meant there is the agreement in every religion through realization, not by mere talking. So let us not talk about religion, let us live this religion. Swamiji said, living how? Living by serving the God in the poor, and having self-realization as the aim. It is not only by serving the poor alone will not do. We have also to practice some spiritual disciplines. Swami has told these 4 yogas. In all the 4 yogas, the fundamental, he tells here, truthfulness must come into our life. Purity must come into our life. Selflessness must come into our life. And daily remembrance of God, that He is our father and mother. He is there to help us. And prayer to Him. Turn your mind to God and pray to Him. Whatever you pray will be granted. If my father and mother do not deny me whatever I want, I may ask anything. If father and mother are able to give, certainly they will give. They will never say no. And we ask God for whatever you want. They are the real father and mother. You will get everything. And they can never say, I don't have. Our physical father sometimes say, I don't have. God cannot say, I don't have. So such a father and mother we have. Turn to God and practice the spiritual disciplines of truthfulness, of purity, of selflessness and prayers. Simple prayers to God. I will close my talk with one very nice incident about this prayer, which we do by singing the glory of God and meditating on God. Dhyan and bhajan. So dhyan, bhajan, if it's there in our life, so we can very easily advance in spiritual life. You know, we have heard the name of Mirabai, the one of the greatest women saints of India. She became a great saint later, but when she was young, she was brought up by her grandfather. By somehow or other, her father and mother had no time to bring her up. She lived with her grandfather. Grandfather was a great devotee of Sri Krishna. So he would sing the glory of Krishna. He would meditate on Krishna also. So this young girl would be with grandfather. She is seeing her grandfather just loudly singing the glory of Krishna. And suddenly after five or one or two songs or three songs, he is elevated to a higher level of devotion. He becomes silent. He meditates. He meditates on God. He is sitting silent. So this girl is observing. Just till now he was telling loudly something. He was singing. He was telling something loudly. Suddenly he has become silent. Silently he is closing his eyes and sitting. What is this grandfather doing? So when grandfather comes down from that level, she asks, Grandpa, you now and then go on talking. Suddenly you become silent. And then close your eyes. Again you just become loudly talking. What is this? Then the grandfather said, I do bhajan and I do dhyan. What is bhajan and dhyan? Meera asked. Suppose she had asked any one of us, what would we say? Keep quiet now, you are only 5 years old. When you grow up, you will know. It would be our reply. But that grandfather was a very considerate one. And he had the capacity to make the child understand what bhajan was, what meditation was. He told the child, you see, when I talk loud, that is called bhajan. Bhajan means we talk to God. God sits and silently listens. And meditation, dhyani, God talks to us, we sit silently and listen. When you go deep into the mind, we feel God is near us. So we hear him talk, we keep quiet. So when God keeps quiet and you talk, it is bhajan. When you keep quiet and God talks to you, that is dhyan. It's a great. This type of dhyan and bhajan must come to us regularly. So Swamiji wanted us. We want to serve the poor, to purify our mind. You see, we have enough in this world for all of us for our needs, not for our greeds. So we can satisfy our needs, but don't try to satisfy with greed. Greed cannot be satisfied. So Swamiji said that if you have got more money, give it for others. Serve others, seeing God in them. That is one of the great spiritual practices. Along with that one, practice your spiritual discipline. We shall all certainly realize that we are the immortal selves. And immortal self means that is the goal of life. We will become absolutely fearless. We can live a free life, fearless of our death also. Swamiji always used to say, a man of realization is neither afraid of life nor of death. Neither afraid of life is very important in this age. In this age, the tension is gripping. Even the small boys and girls, small boys are pressurized by the parent. Hey, you must become first in the class. That boy does not know at all what is to be first. I remember children know competition only when they come to class 5 or 6. That means they are about 10 years old. Then only they think of competition. They do not know to compete at all. What is there to compete? Let them everywhere go. Let us be behind. They don't know anything about competition. I remember one small incident. some officers, they were all having a function. So between them, this veteran race, and so many competitions they had, and all the veteran race and other competitions were over. Some one elderly man thought, see, our children are also here, why not have some competition for them also? Oh, the mothers got the idea. All right, I will bring my baby, you bring your baby, let us put them all into a race. All are 5 years old and 6 years old. So they were all made to stand in a line. And then some 10 children, so each mother is instructing them. You see, here only 5 yards only. The other one lady will be standing there, you must go and touch and you will get a prize. Huh? Will you do? Every child is shaking it. What it is understood, nobody knows. So all the 10 girls are made to stand, all the 10 mothers behind them. So a signal was given. Then mother said, oh, go, touch. All the fellows started. Only 1 yard they went. After one went this way, one went that way, one turned back and went back. How will you make them? They don't know at all. Do you want to put them in competition? So now, so much of tension in our society. Perhaps it is here also, there also in our country. Small children, they are asked to compete and come first. In this world, life has become very terrific. So much of tension. That's why so much of suicide, so much of unhappy incidents are taking place. That's what Swamiji referred. A man of realization or man of spirituality is not afraid of life also. Why should we be afraid of life? Trials come to our life. I have 10 lakhs of rupees in the bank and the bank goes bankrupt. Why should I commit suicide for that one? Who has earned the 10 lakhs of rupees? I. If I have earned 10 lakhs of rupees, I will earn another 10 lakhs of rupees. If I myself die, what will happen? Nothing will happen. Don't die. You have made money. You again make money. This confidence comes to you when you know money is not the big thing. My life is greater than money. Life is greater than everything. This idea basically will come to when we commit all sorts of heinous things, including suicide, when we feel absolutely helpless. We think there is nothing, nobody to help. When we believe that we are the children of God, that comes to us because of our prayers daily, morning and evening. We think it is a simple thing. No, it's not a simple thing. Morning and evening prayer, it reminds you that God is your father and mother. He is there to help you, only to turn and ask Him. Oh Lord, I mean, my 10 lakhs of rupees has been lost. I don't know any way. Please show me the way. At least nothing may happen. You may not get 10 lakhs of rupees immediately. You will not commit suicide. That is happening immediately. Because God is there. You have prayed to Him. You wait. When once you wait, you have passed that moment when the idea of suicide comes. You will never commit suicide. So we have never seen real devotees even thinking of suicides or destroying or creating problems for others also. This is being not afraid of life. Another one small incident comes to me, I'll close with that. This idea that God is there for us always. In Bombay, as I said, I lived for 7.5 years in Bombay Ashram. So some officers there in a nearby locality, Koliwada, some 20-22 officers, government officers, they said, Swamiji, we want to read Bhagavad Gita, why don't you come and teach us every Sunday? All right. I started the class. We took about 3 years. Every week, class in one officer's house. Then I would go there and for about 1-1.5 hours, Gita class. We took 3 years and we completed. In the course of this one, there was one officer. And in his house, he and his wife, he has a small child, of class 3 or 4, he was studying. I remember that boy was a very intelligent boy, and mother was also a school teacher. So whenever their turn would come, so as soon as I would go, they would give him a cup of milk and perhaps some snacks. Afterward, the class would start. Whenever I would be sitting for taking the milk, this little fellow would come to me. Swamiji, where are you come from? I said, I am coming from Ramakrishna Mission. What is that Ramakrishna Mission? Oh, we have got in Ramakrishna Mission, we have temple. Everybody can come and then sing and they enjoy it. And we have got a hospital. Anybody can come and take medicine freely. We have got a library. Anybody come and treat. We got a guest house also, you can come and stay. And tell these things. This fellow is here. Class 4 boy. So once, twice, thrice he has heard from me. What he understood, I don't know. On another week, when I went, morning, the mother and the son are fighting with one another. Mother is telling very, very harsh words to him, scolding him like anything, you are a fool. And this fellow is retorting. And then I asked, what is this early morning, the mother and father, your mother and son fighting? Then the mother tells me, Swami, last evening this fellow had a school function and this fellow had been given a drama part of a girl. So he wanted my sari to wear and then act as a girl. He has taken my very costly sari and took it, and after the action he has thrown it there itself and come away. And then by the time he has reached, it was so late in the night. When I ring up, the school is closed. Everybody says, we don't know. Next day morning when we go, my sari is lost. I could not get because of this foolish fellow. When I told him, you are a fool, he says, Mother, if you scold me like that, I will go away to Ramakrishna Mission. So mother is so furious. You fellow, you are telling me like this? Then I told, Mother, no child could have given a better answer than this. If any other child, mother and father is the whole world. If the mother and father start holding them, they feel the whole world is empty. They would have replied, we will jump into water and die. This would be the reply, normal. This boy did not tell that. He says, I go to Ramakrishna Mission. He has found some refuge, something higher than society. That is why, you see, he will never commit suicide, anything will happen in his life. This is the greatest insurance. This is the faith in God. What that boy said, I go to Ramakrishna Mission, is there is something higher than you, father and mother, higher than you, society. That power will never fail. So we must give that faith to children. Our children who are studying in colleges, schools, give them this prayer and education. They will never do anything wrong in their life. And they will be happy, they will be brave, they will be bold, they will be saved in all tribulations and sufferings. With this, we shall close our discourse. Thank you very much.
Maharaj, the second generation of Indians who are growing up in this country, they are a confused generation because they are caught between two cultures. And a very large number of them are depressed. They have various kinds of problems, you know. How can you motivate the second generation of Indians who are growing here with the wonderful teachings of Swami?
One thing evidently, as you see, is our Vedanta centers here. Our Swamis are here. They know the second generation also, first generation also. So many of them I know, they have got some ways by which, you know, if we can bring the children up in the vicinity or in the atmosphere of our Vedanta centers or under the influence of the Swamis, they leave the centers also, come out also, like Dayatmananji has come now. So they go, they travel also. Bring your children under the influence of these Swamis as much as you can. And you take the teachings, the first generation, as you say, They have got upon them the influence of Sri Ramakrishna is there, Swamiji is there. I take the name of Sri Ramakrishna and Swamiji and Mother because what we call as Sanatana Dharma in essence is what Sri Ramakrishna has taught us. He has taken the essence of the Sanatana Dharma, the great Vedic religion. So he has given us in the very, very simple way. As one of our Swamis put, the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna like seedless grapes, very easy to put in the mouth and gulp. So these teachings of Sri Ramakrishna and Mother and Swamiji, you elders also should read. You make it a point in reading at least one or two pages of Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, Gospel of Holy Mother, and from Swamiji's works. It will inspire you. And usually children are influenced by the parents. Whether they are in America, whether in India. The father and mother certainly influence a great way the child. If they see a book of gospel in your hand, if they hear some from your mouth the name of Sri Ramakrishna and Mother and Swamiji, they will certainly ask, who is this Sri Ramakrishna or Mother and Swamiji? In your own simple way, you tell them that these are God Himself that have come. And just like Krishna and Rama and Buddha and Christ, so Sri Ramakrishna is a great God. So if we take His name itself, it will give us strength. Children want strength. Children want security. Children want brilliance in their career. You tell, you take the name of Ramakrishna, you will be brilliant, you will be strong, you will be secure. He is everywhere. He is like, even me, we love you. He loves you more than us. You can put these ideas when they are young. This seed will work upon them. And now and then you bring them to the atmosphere. You see, you spend so much on traveling here and there. Sometime you make 1 or 2 days or 3 days. Go to some nearest Vedanta center. Let the Swami, now that we have got American Swamis also are there, American nuns are there. So if they all speak to the children, they think, oh, even the people of this country also have accepted this Ramakrishna Vivekananda which father has told us. So they will not think that it's something alien. Oh, these nuns and monks of this country also are talking about Ramakrishna Vivekananda. Oh, it's something very great. They take it in a natural way. When they just grow up, so we have got a lot of children's literature now. We are also feeling the necessity. So I saw a lot of about almost 50 titles, 60 titles in his Vedanta center in London. In other centers also you have got comic books are there on the lives of great saints and seer, especially on Ramakrishna Vivekananda and Sri Ramakrishna. I mean Holy Mother. You can bring those comic books and put it in your house. Whether your child reads it or not, then and there, sometime he will look at it. The influence of Ramakrishna is so inexplainable. When he will catch a child, you do not know. And these children will pick up that and read that comics. They will be influenced. Slowly, slowly you can bring them back. When the seeds are sown, then you can be very sure it will grow up. And mainly it depends upon at the younger age on the parents. You try to digest as much as possible and give it to them in simple form. And outside also they must be given an exposure to the Vedanta societies here or through the comic books etc. Or now so many things are coming on, TV channels are there. 24-hour channels, religious channels are there, showing good things, showing good things. You can show them the legends of Hindu saints and seers, Puranas, etc. Especially the Ramayana, Mahabharata. It is so interesting to everyone. This afternoon we were seeing the Bhagavatam, the life of Sri Krishna, animated film, so nicely. Even we elders are attracted by it. You can show it on the TV screen or computer screen to children. So in your own way, because this is the modern age, so many things are there. You can try all these things. One thing or other will succeed. Only you have to take care to put the seeds into them. When once the seeds are sown, you take care of them up to 10, 11 or 12 years. Their religious life is formed at that time. Afterwards, you cannot change it basically. Their love for their religious culture, their love for parents, love for saints and seers, and love for God, it goes deep into them. You cannot take it away. We have experimented with tribal children. They come to our hostel when they are 5 years or 6 years. They are there for about 10 years. 15 or 16, they pass out of class 10. Now we have upgraded to class 12. For a long time, it was only class 10 in the tribal area. They would go to several schools where the Christian missionary school they would go, and some would go into Mohammedan schools. So everywhere, and where they would hear something not about Hinduism, about other things, sometimes criticism of our culture also, that never influenced those children. They will hold on to what they learned in the first 15 years. They would come back. One girl, one tribal girl, she after passing class 10, we didn't have class 12 and college in in Arunachal Pradesh area. She went into a government school where in Shillong. Shillong in India, you know, it is a hotbed of Christian missionary activities. So there Christian schools and Christian, everything is Christian. So she went and joined. She is a tribal girl. All the other students, they started influencing her. What is this? You have got this tribal name. Change this over. So your name is Selaika. So Selaika is a tribal name. It is not good. You have your name as Cinderella. It is very good. That girl, because she had been educated in us, we had told her, your tribal name has been given to you by your parents. It is as sacred as any other name, as our Hindu names are. So you hold on to your name. She has digested that teaching. Went on fighting with them for all the 4 years she was there, until she graduated. She did not give up her name, neither accepted any other religion. She remained a tribal, came back to Arunachal Pradesh, married another tribal boy who was also trained by us. She is her husband is a big officer. She is there even today. That strength of mind to fight against one's own convictions come to her because the first 15 years of coaching her or training, we can easily try that. And of course, human beings, each one has to be treated in a special way. So you have to adopt. General principle is this. Put the seeds into them in a simple way. Father and mother, if they follow something, children always think whatever father and mother do is good. And it should be should follow. And he takes pride. He will imitate you. If you praise him, he thinks, oh, father is praising, this is very good. So whenever he does something, ask him to do something. Give him a small shivalinga. You put some flower upon that, you tell. If he puts a flower, you clap your hand. He will think putting flower on the shivalinga is very good. So these simple things in the beginning, we have to inculcate into them. And in India, it takes place in a natural way. Our fathers and mothers in the evening, we would be playing. They would call us, hey, it is 6 o'clock, come. We will light the lamp before God and we shall pray. We would be half through the game. We were not at all willing to come. No, it is the time to light the lamp before in the sannidhi. Sannidhi means the prayer hall. In the prayer hall, you have to light the lamp, come. So we would reluctantly give up our game and come back and sit. And mother would be there. Father always may not be there. Mother would be there, sisters would be there, brothers would be there. We would sit. They light a simple lamp and pray. After this, some stotras in Sanskrit, some songs they would sing. Maybe 15-20 minutes. Every day in the evening, we would do that. That went so deep into us. They did not teach much about religion. We all became highly religious. These seeds were sown. It came in a natural way. Here, I don't know, father and mother, you may be busy. Some arrangement must be made for children to get the culture transferred to them. Now children get information, but transference of culture is not taking place because fathers and mothers, even in India, are very busy. So for Indian conditions, I always tell them, look here, you father and mother may be busy. You may not be able to tell about your father or your grandfather, etc. You may have no time. Or Ramayana or Mahabharata, etc. You may not have time. Why don't you at least keep your father and mother, grandfather, one grandfather either from the father's side or of the mother's side, let them be with you. So you go to office. The child is happy with grandfather and grandmother. We have a temple in Chennai. Mm-hmm. It's called the Universal Temple of Sri Ram Krishna of the Millennium. We opened it in 2000. Mm-hmm. I observed there from morning 5 o'clock. At night, 9 o'clock, it is open. People are going round and round and round. And among the most of them are grandfather and grandchild pair. Grandmother and grandchild. They are a pair. They enjoy each other's company. And that means the parents have no problem. And the child is talking to grandfather. He is telling about Mahabharata, Ramayana. They are talking, they are moving around also. Natural way. He learns all the history of the family, history of the country, history of our religion. And grandfather is happy with the grandchild is happy. This it is happening in India. Here I don't know how you will arrange it. For Indian conditions, I always say, you see, we are moderner cities, true. You have a nuclear family, it is true. But our nuclear family must include a grandfather and a grandmother. It is not only a husband, wife and child plus a grandfather and grandmother. That is our unit, nuclear family. Wherever grandfather and grandmother are there, the children are so happy, they don't bother so much about the parents. So this combination, through that only culture gets transferred. By something they have to tell, and the grandfather goes on telling story, and the child goes on listening, and the transference of culture is there. And naturally grandfather praises his son or the daughter, so this fellow develops love for the parents also. All the good things happen. This sort of a transference of culture. In some way, we have to, you being here in these areas, how you can do that one? We have to think some way that culture is to be transferred. In fact, one of the principles of good education is it should transfer not only, it should give not only the information about science, technology, humanities and other things, it should transfer the culture of the nation to the children. That was done by the hostel life in foreign countries. Earlier, good education was always residential, through residential schools. The school would give, or college would give the curricular education, hostel would give the cultural education. You see the history of English schools, residential schools, the boys in the hostel would be taught discipline, the veneration to the queen, salutation to the king, singing about the glory of empire, all would be taught, and discipline of the hostel. They should follow every word the hostel warden says, and they have to polish the shoes of the hostel warden. This is one of the disciplines. In Jawaharlal Nehru's life, you see, he did not like that. See, the hostel warden would make us clean their shoes and polish their shoes, but that is discipline. Discipline used to be taught in the hostel. Curriculum used to be taught in the school. The education was complete. In our education now, they get only curriculum, no discipline. Indiscipline of education. So in this context, present context, we have to import the spiritual education in the simplest way possible. We have to think about it. It's not a sort of accomplished thing. Everybody is worried about it. In India, value education imparting is a big subject being discussed. I don't know, in England also it must be saying values to be imparted along with education. It's a problem everywhere.
Thank you.
Swamiji,
Yes.
Your Friends of India here is doing a lot of fun. They have a group for the children only, and a lot of them parents are paying and imparting all the Indian culture to them. And also they are doing the same thing in temple too. The young couples here, I'm really impressed. They take a lot of interest in bringing all the children and training. They have classes every week, as a matter of fact. Okay, so we are trying to impart the culture.
Very, very good. And one thing I am seeing here, this Ramakrishna societies, what you call Vedanta society here, Ramakrishna ashrams in India, somehow they bring all people together and forge a unity. Otherwise, you know, we are all divided in some, either by language or by deities we select. Oh, I am a worshipper of Shiva, I am a worshipper of Krishna, and or by some other loyalties. But all the people come together in the name of Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. I tell you a funny, an interesting incident. There is a district in India called Kanyakumari district, southernmost district. There, though it is the part and parcel of Tamil Nadu, 80% of the population have become Christian there. And 20% only are Hindus. If they have to go to a school, they have to go to a Christian school only. And so these Hindus are very much afraid how to save this 20%. So they were all, they would all get together They started one institution called Harsha Vidyapita. That means teaching the Vedas. Teaching the Vedas and the Vedic culture to this 20%. So that, you know, they will not be lured away into other religion. So they got a course every weekend. The teachers would go and meet these small children, school children, teach them. And there is an examination every year. It is a 3 years course and they will give. So he is a Vidya Vibhushana or something, some title they give. Thousands of children come. They study and they understand what is Ganesha, what is Hanuman, what is Ramchandra, what is Ramayana, what is Mahabharata, about their own glory of their. And it has to a great extent influenced the whole communities, so they have all come together. In the meanwhile, when I went there, they wanted me to address this group, this 20% of people, and they were complaining, Swami, with all our efforts, our children are being lured away, because all the schools are there, colleges are there, but parallel influence is so much, so there some of them are being lured away. In the meanwhile, they brought one incident to me, my notice. One very rich man, he came here and then he said he is going to build a temple for Ganesha, spending some crores. So we told them, they were telling me, we told him instead of building a Ganesha temple, you build up a school and a college so that our children can come here without any fear. So you can give Hindu culture also. At the same time, run the college. He said, no, I don't want a college. I will build a Ganesha temple. So these people told him, if you build a Ganesha temple, if these 20% are converted to Christianity, who will come to your temple? But he will not realize. He will say, I will build only Ganesha temple. In that context, I told that leaders of that in that conference, you see, you all teach Hinduism. You teach about Ganesha, teach what he... His devotion to Ganesha is also, we have to praise. He has got so much of devotion, so he will build a temple. So, praise all the gods, let all be praised. In the end, you teach Sri Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. Teach about Ganesha, teach about Shiva, teach about Kali, teach about all the Ramayana and Mahabharata. All that will not be complete unless you teach Vivekananda and Ramakrishna. Who are the persons who will bring all the communities, all the languages, all the deities, followers of deity as one group. This spiritual group can be formed only with this mantra of Sri Ramakrishna and then Vivekananda. So they were appreciated me very much. They are following it. Because we somehow or other, we become small-minded. When once we take one part, if you come to Sri Ramakrishna, your small-mindedness is shattered. If you come to Vivekananda, you can no more say, oh, I am only a worshipper of Shiva. So many of our devotees, they know our family background. Before we came up, so we were Vaishnavas, or we were Shaktas, or we were Shaivas. Some people say, Swami, are you not a Vaishnava? I said, I am also a Vaishnava, I say. Whenever they say, yes, I am also a Vaishnava. After coming to Sri Ramakrishna, I am also a Vaishnava. I am all. I am Shiva also, I am Shakti also, I am Christian also, I am a Buddhist also. I am also a Vaishnava. This feeling must come. All of us. And this is happening in the name of Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. In India, we have got official centers, about 140 centers, 150 centers are there. Unofficial centers are about 1,000 centers are there, 1,000. And everywhere, wherever we go, nobody talks about either their caste or creed or language. What they ask is, to which ashram do you go? Then he says, I go to Chennai ashrama. Another will say, I go to Shalam ashrama. They become friends. The other day, last time when I was visiting New York, so I was sitting in Chicago. Last time I visited Chicago, I was sitting with Shidanandji. Then one girl came and then she sent a message. So I want to see Swami Gautamananji. I said, who is that here in Chicago? I am a student of your Vidyalaya. Kasharda Vidyalaya in Chennai, I will come here, I want to meet you. So I asked her to come up. As soon as she came, Chidananda asked her, oh, you are our Sharda Vidyalaya student. Hey, give her a little tea, give her a little coffee, she becomes a member of the family. They did not inquire what is your language, what is your antidote. You visit, you are part of Chennai Mutt, enough. This is Sri Ramakrishna. Here nobody asks. Ordinary people also. We never ask the caste or creed or language. How nicely we mix together. Ramakrishna is enough for us. We belong to Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. So natural. Preach Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. I am not fanatic about it. In the sense, it's the power we are seeing. It unites Ramakrishna's name, Vivekananda's name. It is a power. It takes away all the sectarianism and brings us everyone together. So that is the great panacea. We must spread. All along with all, not that we should not spread the other culture. We want Ramayana, we want Bhagavata, we want. Along with that one, Thakur and Mother and Swamiji. They bring us together, make us into a well-knit unit. That is when they say.
Are you seeing a
concluding song? Oh yes.